All right. Well, look at this. Look who's heading over this way. Rocking. How you doing, Mr. Knight?
Coach Knight.
Mr. Knight. That's ridiculous. It's Coach.
Here. Mr. Knight.
That's ridiculous. Here, grab a headset there, Coach.
Mr. Knight's his dad.
I know. It's horrible. We hope your heart is plenty strong. How's it going?
That seems like some extra tanned skin. Have you been out?
I'm always that way.
No. Oh, wait. We got a song playing. Sorry. I feel like we're in black and red. Do you remember this? When
he's on, I heard that in places you guys couldn't even find me.
Yeah?
What do you mean? About recruiting and stuff?
Huh? Doesn't care for second
place. There we go.
We can't hear the whole thing, or no?
Oh, you want to hear the whole thing?
No, no, no,
it's probably only 10 more seconds.
Let's go.
I don't use up all this time.
All right. Welcome, Coach. Thanks very much for joining us. Haven't seen you in many years.
Well, that probably means I haven't seen you in many years.
Yeah.
But
it's probably more exciting for me to see you again.
Well, I don't know. I think it's nice to be with you two guys. I've had a lot of fun with you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So... the transition to broadcasting, you
guys made it. I mean,
if we can do it, anybody can do it.
What I thought. I said, if those two guys can broadcast something, I said, I don't know, it can't be that difficult.
And it's not.
Is
right?
It fun?
Yeah, I enjoy it. You know, I'm with really, really good people. Reese Davis and Dan Shulman and Brent Musburger are three guys that I work with and I have really thoroughly enjoyed them. And then the guys that Dick Vitale and Digger and Jay Billis, Hubert Green. It's a good group of people. Just nice to be with.
We're fascinated with you, of course, and your career, but we're also fascinated with Brent because we all grew up around Brent, and I would imagine when you two travel, I'm not saying it's a co-marquee billing or anything like that, but he's a pretty big deal, isn't he?
Well, he has a great sense of humor, and it isn't like that the fate of the world rests on the outcome of this game.
Right.
And he has a great way of letting whoever he's working with, like, I don't watch Brent and myself work, but I really enjoy when I see Brent with Kurt Herbstreit in college football, because they are really, really good, and I hope that we come over as well in basketball as those two guys do in football.
When he gets to giggling, though, there's no bringing it back.
Oh, he has a good sense of humor, and he enjoys things that are funny, and it isn't, you know, as I said, this isn't like World War III.
Right. There's
now,
no doubt.
Back when we did a show together, you follow the Cowboys somewhat because your good friend was the head coach. You still following the exploits of the Dallas football team? Or?
I went to the Dolphins.
Oh, now you're a Dolphins fan.
Where Parcells goes, that's where I go.
Okay. There you go.
Just wondered if you're following him at all.
No, Parcells and Belichick. You know, I knew Bill's dad well and worked hard. And
how
helped.
Did you know him?
Oh, I just knew he was coaching at the Naval Academy when I was at West Point.
Okay.
So I got to know his dad really well, and I got to know Bill when he was working with the Giants, with Bill Parcells, and actually really helped him with the first head job he had with Cleveland, and have followed them very, very closely. The other team that I really have a personal interest in is Pittsburgh with Dick LeBeau. He and I were in school together.
No kidding.
And became good friends in college, had classes together. And he was a senior when I was a freshman. He was a great athlete. And then the first year he was on the Browns taxi squad. And then for the next 13 years he played for the Lions in a defensive backfield. And just to show you how, you know, things can change, he ended up, on the basis of what he did with the Lions, he ended up in the Football Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
And he's done a tremendous job coaching the Steelers defense.
Yeah, it's tough to be a player Hall of Fame caliber and a coach Hall of Fame caliber, but he's both.
You know, I mentioned to I had a chance to talk to Lou Piniella when I was up at watching the Cardinals play. Actually, just a couple days before he dropped out completely. And I told him this, and it's kind of what you just said. I said, you know, Lou, you've had a great career as a manager and as a player. And there are not a lot of players, managers that can say that. I said, there have been a lot of great managers that weren't very good players, and there are a lot of great players that weren't very good managers.
Right.
But I said, you're in, and he said he'd never thought of that. And I said, well, I think that's something to really be proud of, because you're one of those few guys that was an extraordinarily good player and an extraordinarily good manager.
Why do you think you can't do both? Not that you can't, some can, but...
Well, why can I not do anything I want to? Some things I'm just not good at. Some things I don't... Why can't you do everything that you want to do? It's just, there's a limit to whether it be communication or ability to observe or ability to teach. Not everybody has all those qualities.
Yeah, we always talk about that with the Rangers with Ted Williams. You know, obviously a guy who could hit better than anyone, but... Could he convey that message all the time? It's you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting study.
Well, you probably could convey that message all the time if you had good hitters.
Okay, yeah.
And, well, that's a huge part of it when you're talking about something like that. And I think it's really hard with Williams. We're talking about a different cat. I mean, we're talking about some guy who perfection was a goal.
Yeah.
And you can't have perfection with a team. You know, there are going to be good times and bad times, and guys are going to strike out, or guys are going to miss free throws, or whatever it is. So somebody that was as geared to perfection as he was is not set up to be a great manager.
I really admire your ability to do this from a basically an airfield here during an attack.
You didn't even flinch.
You're doing very well with the sirens and all.
I've been in a lot of dugouts.
Hey, let me ask you something. We did a show with you every week for 3 years, and I can't remember ever asking you about the 84 Olympic team as it pertains to one of the stories from that they always talk about was Charles Barkley not making the team. And I was always curious from your perspective, looking back at that roster that you selected from that player pool, did you ever second-guess that decision, or what was the rationale? I'm always just curious how Barkley didn't make the 84 Olympic team.
Well, he didn't make it because he wasn't good enough to play on that team. That's the basic reason.
Okay.
Barkley came in, and he weighed 283 pounds. And he lost 9 pounds in 6 days and got down to 274.
Uh-huh.
So we sent Barkley home with everybody else, and I brought, I think it was 22 kids back. And I told Barkley that... We're sending him home at 274 pounds. When he comes back, you're going to have to weigh 265, or I'll send you back home. Because you can't play at that weight in the NBA to begin with, and you're not going to play at that weight on this team. So in order for you to continue to practice, you're going to have to come back at 265.
How much time?
He had 18 days.
Okay,
I think.
18 days.
Well, that's two hamburgers a day for Barkley.
Sure.
And so, this was in 1984. And so, Barkley came back, and he's in a drill out there, a shooting drill. And I sent our team manager, Tim Garl, I said, Tim, go get me the weight charts. And he brought in the weight charts, and not only had Barkley not gone down to 265, he went up to 284.
He went back?
And I told Tim to get him his plane ticket. And I told him, I said, people may not tell you what they want, or they may not follow through on it, but I told you what I wanted. Now, for the next 8 years, Barkley bitched and complained about not making the Olympic team when it was his own fault. So I don't have a whole lot of use for Charles Barkley.
Wow. So
does that answer your question?
Oh, it does.
Then let's go on to another subject.
All right. Very good. Bob Knight with us on Sports Radio 1310, The Ticket, and the interest in perfection. Do you feel like 1976, from the perspective of the 32-0, was that your finest coaching job?
Well, you know, I think that always centers around how good were your players. You know, I think there are games or seasons when coaches have put something together that was really extraordinary. Now, I don't mean to belittle what we did with that undefeated season, but yet there were probably other teams that we had that, based on the total talent that we had, that maybe went further than you might expect them to go. Mm-hmm. You know, that team had had players that played in the NBA. We won it in 87 with only two guys that ever had a shot at playing in the NBA, and they were very marginal at best. So I look at those two teams, and the latter of the two probably had a lot to do with winning, or what had a lot to do with winning, was their closeness and their dependency on one another, and their ability not to make mistakes. So do you pick that team or the team that had more talent? So in both cases, we had to mold two different teams. So I don't know that probably somewhere along the way, maybe a team that I had at West Point that won a couple of games in the NIT may have been the best thing that we put together. I think that's really hard, because I don't think that you can simply say this team had the best record, therefore it was the best job the team and the coach did. I don't know that there's a real correlation there.
While you were coaching, you always seemed to dismiss if we said, hey, you've just passed this milestone or that. And even when we visited you at Tech, I think Pat told us, he doesn't even pay attention. Like, this is the ball from his 700th win, and he threw it in the corner. And if Pat didn't go get it, you wouldn't even have it to this day. Now that you're not coaching, have you looked back, and do you take more of it in now?
No, I don't think so. I spend more time figuring out where I'm going to fish than looking back. You know, all that's history. Now, what are we going to do tomorrow? Well, I'm going home this afternoon. I'm going to get up 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to Wyoming fishing tomorrow. You know, and I just want to make damn sure I got the right rods and the right flies in the truck when I get home tonight. Then we're going to go to North Dakota pheasant hunting. I got to make sure I got the right shells. I don't have time to think about that stuff that happened before.
Save some animals for everyone else.
You know, I'm tickled to death that I had a chance to coach most of the players that I coached, and the opportunity to coach the Olympic team, and you know, I'm glad I could do that. But I don't sit around looking at scrapbooks and reading stories and books about what happened in the past. That's never been much of an interest for me.
Where do you live now?
We live in Lubbock.
Okay. I didn't realize you stayed there.
Well, there are probably one or two things you've not realized over all the years that you've been broadcasting.
We're trying to catch up.
I'm sure that you're not as compact as the Encyclopedia Britannica is on what's going on everywhere.
We're trying, though.
Coach, I know very little. Very little.
Now you're self-serving, because you're a lot smarter than that. And I've known you long enough to know that. So the more you talk, the deeper you're going to get here.
I was wondering what you thought of the whole LeBron scene this summer.
Well, you know, even the people that I work for, ESPN, I was sorry to see that what they did with that. I mean, I'll tell you, Chamberlain, Baylor, and West played together. And they didn't win. And am I going to take these three guys over Chamberlain, Baylor, and West? There's no way. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I think the NBA makes a huge mistake in allowing somebody to sign three free agents at a time. You know, I think you sign one every 2 years or one, spread it around. Not only does that do something to equalize talent, but it also does something to give these teams that have taken on a James or whomever, and that guy's developed with that team, it maybe gives them a little bit better chance to keep those guys.
Is that on some level and you've told us before the specifics about your chance to coach in the NBA and why you were did not go for it, but is that in a nutshell what happened this summer, kind of why you didn't have a whole lot of use for the NBA game from that standpoint,
business of it? You know, there are things in the NBA. They're great athletes. The best athletes in the world play NBA basketball. I mean, it ain't even close. I don't care whether it's the NFL or what it is. The guys that can do the most athletic things the best play pro basketball, period. And so, but I just, that's just a remark that I made not long ago when somebody asked me. I just said, it seems to me that what they should be concentrating on as they try to do in the draft is spread the wealth around a little bit to make more teams competitive. I mean, there are, as you well know, some teams in the NBA that are not very competitive.
Right. Absolutely. And the coach at the college level, the coach is a significant, obviously, orchestrator of the team. I don't know at the NBA the coach has that much impact as he does in the college game. Probably not even close, right?
Well, I had an interesting experience. One time when Bart Starr was coaching the Packers, one of his teammates, Bob Skowronski, who was the offensive captain of that Packer team, Bart had asked him, Bob, to have me come to Green Bay and speak to his coaching staff. And as I recall, thinking of the staffs today, there are only six people on Bart's coaching staff, or six that were there at this time. Three were basically college guys, and three were pro guys.
Okay.
And as I talked in an evening and the next morning, I summed up each time what all had taken place with what I said. And the three college guys were very interested, very much asking questions, wanted to know what I thought about this situation or that. The pro guys never cared one bit about what I had to say. And I went away from that thinking, one thing I don't want to do is coach pros.
And why do you feel like they weren't interested?
Well, I don't know. Pro guys, I'm a college basketball coach.
Yeah.
You know, I never played pro football. They analyze it that way.
Okay, I see.
You know, neither did Lombardi.
Yeah.
And neither did Belichick. And neither did Parcells. But I'm not sure the players themselves ever understand that.
Well, Coach, we're getting the wrap it up sign because you have other engagements, or at least hunting.
Fishing.
We don't want you to miss
Wyoming.
All right. Well, good
trout
luck on that.
Fishing.
Well, tell them you're headed that way, and we appreciate your time.
Well, let me just say this on behalf of your listening audience, which I, you know, probably is at least in double figures now, is it not?
It's getting there, yes.
That you two guys over the years that I've done things with on a talk show are among the very best I've ever done anything with. And I appreciated very much the way you treated me and the way you tried to bring out things that people might be interested in. I think that you two, and I don't feel this about all people in the question and answer business by a long shot, but you two guys have been very, very good for sports and sports in the Dallas area, but just sport in general. And I appreciate the effort and what both of you do.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you, Coach.
Coach, good times. Great to see you again.
Okay, boys.
Thank you, sir.
Go get them. Go get those fish.
There is the general, Bob Knight, and this is the ticket.